Welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Here are your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lowell.
And welcome in, everybody. It is the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast back for another great episode. It feels really good, Seth, to be back in town, back to recording another show and talking fantasy football once again.
Yeah, this last weekend was a blur for us. A couple fantasy football drafts. We got another couple drafts this week. It's that time of year. These next 2 weeks are going to be rapid fire. So we got a jam-packed hour podcast tonight for our listeners. What's on the agenda?
Yeah, well, we're going to be talking about drafts. We're going to be giving our insight in terms of what we've kind of been seeing from drafts. So now that me and Seth have done a couple early ones, these upcoming weekends are the quote-unquote, you know, draft weekend, specifically next weekend. So we want to spend all episode talking drafts. I mean, everyone is going to love this episode. We're going to be talking about some of the overvalued, undervalued players that we're seeing in drafts. Some of the trending players that are moving up and down boards. We're also going to be talking about bench players. Who do you want to put on your bench that might be a starter? Maybe the ideal team that we're trying to capitalize and put together. And also we're going to be doing a quick little top 24 draft between me and you, Seth. Just we're getting a lot of listener questions in terms of, hey, I got the 7th overall pick. Who should I take 7th overall? Maybe who should I take on the way back down? So me and Seth are going to go rapid fire one after another for the top 24 on how we would approach it, and having alternating picks in the top 24. So we've got all that planned for this episode. We're going to do our best to hit it all, the best to move on it quickly. But first, Seth, one of the biggest things that it just was so evident to me in doing another draft this weekend was the human element of these drafts. I mean, I don't know how many mocks I've done online, and Fantasy Pros Draft Wizard is really good. But even in an auction draft, according to all my settings, and everyone's been doing all these drafts, you're either going to a live draft on ESPN or you're doing the automated mocks with Draft Wizard, you feel like you got a real sense of where people are going, maybe what their values are in an auction, and then you get into a real draft, and then you're like, well, I couldn't plan on that. I couldn't plan on this. I couldn't plan on that. So, Seth, what was your opinion on, you know, just the human error elements? I call it the human error because people were making errors.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think it's natural. I think you see it every year in fantasy football drafts. It's like when you do – if you have a presentation that you're doing in class or at work and you practice it at home, you're going to fumble through it. You mess up. But when you're in front of people, you're naturally with the adrenaline going. You just get laser focused and you generally perform better. Sometimes people crumble under pressure too, so it goes both ways. But I think when you're in the draft, that's when all that sort of kicks in. All the mock drafts you do, all the rankings, all that stuff goes out the window. You're in the heat of the moment. And that's why you see certain players, like in the auction you and I did over the weekend, certain players went for a really good price and certain players went for a crazy price just based on the heat of the moment and people overpaying for those stud players. So I think you see a lot of that, and that's what makes these drafts so exciting is they're unpredictable. So I think you see that a lot. We saw that this weekend, and I think a lot of people are going to continue to see that as we kind of hit the peak draft weekends in these next two.
Yeah, and being prepared is going to help you, be able to handle those pressure moments. We had an individual in our league where he drafted 4 quarterbacks and drafted 2 tight ends. Neither tight end can start. You know, one of them's probably not even going to be healthy. The other one is, who knows, can't even start, and drafted like a 4th wide receiver on Cleveland. So I could have picked out like 6 or 7 of his guys that were not even almost rosterable, I felt like. So, and sure enough, he went and dropped a lot of them right afterwards when, I put out a league message, calling out his team, and probably didn't help out myself on that. I should have let him keep all those players. But to my point was, if you were prepared, I don't think you find yourself in those situations as often, Seth. So that's what we're going to try and help everyone with in this episode. But Seth, let's get to our listener question of the episode.
Sounds good. So this one is coming from CJ Drago in San Antonio, Texas. Love the name. Some really good names. We've been getting some really, really good names.
Absolutely. I mean, I want to change my name to one of some of these. I mean, can I be any more boring with Jeff Carrier?
No, I mean, my name is Seth Lull, and I was talking to someone on the phone today, and they said, "Who is this?" I said, "Seth." They're like, "Zach?" Well, you know, Seth. And they go, "Jeff?" And I said, "No, Seth." It's like nobody can understand my name. Nobody can understand it. But anyways, this one's coming from CJ Drago, probably one of the coolest names. And his question is, I was offered a trade of Jamal Charles for three of my players, John Brown, Frank Gore, and Melvin Gordon. Is this a good trade, or am I giving up too much? I only have four other wide receivers, and Jamal's health seems to be my biggest concern. It's a half-point PPR league. So I guess let me throw this to you first, and then I'll follow up.
Yeah, I respond to this first, and Seth was said, you know, hey, pass me over all the emails that we get today, and I'll respond to them. And I saw this email first thing when I woke up, and I responded in a half a second. I didn't even need to forward over to Seth because I just felt like it was that easy. I didn't need to have to forward over to you, Seth, just so you replied back with the same thing. And that is, you're going to take the best player in the draft. In this case, it's Jamal Charles. Now, is his health a little bit of a concern? It is, but obviously me and Seth are really buying in. It's an ACL. He's come back from it. So you got the best player in the draft, and you're getting three, you know, John Brown's decent. Don't get us wrong, but you want the production of the stud.
Yeah, and one thing I just want to clarify, though, you said you want to get the best player in the deal. I think, in general, that's true. But if, let's say, he was offered Julian Edelman, Mark Ingram, and John Brown, you know, Jamal Charles is still the best player in that deal. But you're going to take that deal because the three players you're getting are all a lot better. I mean, Melvin Gordon's not very good. Frank Gore is a solid player with a very, very low ceiling. And especially, I think the format matters to an extent. Is this a deep league? Is it a shallow league? I think most leagues we're finding are pretty shallow leagues, and we've talked about this in the podcast. But a trade like this, you definitely don't do, because you can find the Frank Gores and Melvin Gordons on free agents throughout the year, right? You should never give up a Jamal Charles to get those players. We're 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks away from the start of the season. If you have Jamal Charles, at the very least, you're going to hold out for a much, much better offer. You have the leverage if you have Jamal Charles, because everybody wants a player like that. So I would hold on Jamal Charles. And honestly, like, I don't know about you, but his health is not a concern to me at all. I mean, any running back, there's going to be, you know, the whole injury risk, of course. But I'm not really worried about Jamal Charles' injury this year any more than I am Adrian Peterson or LeSean McCoy or Mark Ingram.
Yeah, I mean, I agree to the point where it's not affecting our draft stock in him at all, right? So I'm not afraid of drafting Jamal Charles, and when I draft him, I'm not going to be trading him for anything like that.
Yep.
Okay, so let's jump into this draft stuff. I can't even say your name now. Jeez. Let's jump into this draft, Seth, and let's start with you said you wanted to do the top 24 first, right?
Correct. Yep. Let's do the first two rounds, because I think, and I know you just touched on this a little while ago, but a lot of the questions we've been getting over the past week or so have been, you know, I have the 7th overall pick in my draft. Who should I take, and who do you think I should take in the second round? Most people are focused on the first couple rounds, and rightfully so, because those are your two cracks at getting stud players, players that can put up 30 points, players that are, you know, Pro Bowl type players. So I think it's a good idea that we focus on those two rounds, and we'll just go back and forth. What do you think? Maybe like a 12 team league, 24?
Yeah, we'll do the top 24. We'll do PPR, of course.
Okay, sounds good. You want the first overall pick?
Yep, I'll take the first overall pick, and this, you know, and I guess this is going to give insight in terms of what we're thinking when certain people are off the board. kind of get everyone in that train of thought of, okay, who would I take next? So while we do this, you know, while you're listening to this episode, go ahead and do it yourself. And if you want to go ahead and pause it in between picks and then just, you know, continue playing as we go ahead and make our picks, go ahead and do that. I think it's going to be a good exercise for everyone here. So I'll start off first. PPR, we're just going to do the normal one quarterback, two wide receiver, two running back, one flex, one tight end league. We're just going to pretend we have those roster settings. Right, Seth?
Yep, that sounds good.
All right, so Antonio Brown is going to be my selection.
And I'm going to take Julio Brown at number two.
Julio Brown?
Oh, jeez. Julio Jones.
Okay, on top of the names tonight. And I'm going to be taking Odell Beckham.
Odell Beckham. And this is where it gets interesting. We know the top three, how they're going to shake out in virtually every draft. I'm going to go Todd Gurley at number four.
Okay. And everyone knows, well, not everyone, but, you know, I've been talking a lot about him on the podcast. He's my fourth overall person. So we actually did a fantasy roadmap this weekend where I think someone got him at the 10th overall pick. And I'm going to take an AJ Green at fifth overall.
Yep, and I'm going to go DeAndre Hopkins at number six.
All right, and for me, this is where it really starts getting interesting for me, because this is where, I don't know. For me, like, I want a top six pick because I just feel like so much more confident in these players before getting to, like, this next group of people. But I'm going to go with Dez Bryant.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, he's rising on my draft boards. I just feel like he's going to have a monster year. With the healthy Romo, Bryant's healthy. He's got a lot to prove us, and I don't want to get off too far on tangent, but I texted you today. There's an article I read about how Dez Bryant was upset that he was only ranked, or that he was only rated a 90 in Madden, and he was saying how he was going to increase that rating very, 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 very quickly. So I was just like,
yeah, I love seeing that kind of stuff. I mean, I know it might sound kind of like cheesy maybe for me to say that, or why are you reading to something like that? But, I mean, if someone is completely determined, sometimes we hear after an entire season, like, oh, why did Keenan Allen do bad his sophomore season? Well, he was unfocused. He didn't put in the same work ethic as he did his rookie year. And it's just, you know, or he didn't stay conditioned as well. When I see someone upset because they're rated poorly in Madden, I mean, I feel like Dez has something to prove. He did not have remotely the year he wanted last year, of course. And if Dak Prescott's throwing him touchdowns the way that Tony Romo is in preseason, he's ready to go in my eyes.
Yeah, and I think the two, you know, I don't mean we put too much weight into it. It's still Dez Bryant. It says Bryant, right? So he's a stud regardless. Anything extra that we can use, you know, it's going to push him over the edge and move up on our boards. Like, every little bit helps with Dez. It's not like, you know, if Theo Riddick complained that he was only rated a 78 in Madden, I'd say, okay, well, you deserve to be a 78. You know, that's actually a pretty good rating for you. But with Dez Bryant, he's already a stud, already a top 10 pick. Anything extra is just more fuel to the fire. So Dez at seven. This is a tough range to be in, because right here at pick seven, I want to go and get some of these receivers, but I feel like I have to take a running back here. And I'm going to take Adrian Peterson at seven overall.
Okay, and that's cool with me, because I was ready and comfortable to go with Jamaal Charles at ninth.
You mean pick eight?
No, I think Dez was seven, Adrian Peterson was eight.
Eight, okay, so wow, okay, sorry. So Jamaal Charles at pick eight, and
nope. He's at pick nine.
Jeez, wow. I'm apparently having trouble counting tonight, so hopefully our listeners can bear with me. So Jamaal Charles at nine, and to round out the top ten, I'm pretty confident in this pick. This is a very hard pick, by the way, because you have Ezekiel Elliott with a ton of upside. You have Le'Veon Bell missing three games, and you have Allen Robinson, right? Brandon Marshall and Keenan Allen. So right here, I have to go Le'Veon Bell. I have to go Le'Veon Bell. His suspension got reduced to three games. He's going to be an animal when he comes back. I know it seems like he can never finish a full year, but I'm taking the leap of faith and I'm going Le'Veon Bell. I can't let him slip towards the end of the first round.
And Seth, I'll admit, I mean, I wasn't too sure how this exercise is going to work out when we're talking about doing this on the air, but I'm already kind of seeing the benefit of it because it's you're picking something, and just because you picked AP doesn't mean I have him ranked there. So already kind of putting ourselves in these draft situations as a really good exercise. So Le'Veon Bell at pick 10. I've got pick 11 here. We're still in the back end of the first round, so I got to keep that in mind, right? I'm gonna try and think like I've got pick 11 and two picks, and I got another pick as well. And I'm definitely looking at Allen Robinson, and definitely looking at Brandon Marshall. I'm looking at Keenan Allen, and it's a PPR league. And I'm going to have to go Allen Robinson. I think the talent is definitely going to outweigh any type of regression that offense might have. So I'm going A-Rob.
Interesting. Okay. And with the last pick in the first round, pick 12, I'm going, ready for this? I'm going Ezekiel Elliott. And I know this is a player that fell a little bit in our rankings, but I think part of this is we're doing these drafts in real time. Like, you know, time has passed since then. I know we haven't seen really anything from Ezekiel Elliott in the preseason. He's got so much upside. I feel like the end of the first round with another pick right behind me, I got two picks in a row, I can afford to, you know, be a little bit risky and take this pick. So I'm going to go Ezekiel Elliott here.
Okay. And let's do this, Seth, on the fly. As I start going back down, I'll start pretending I've already got Elliott, and we can both read off who we already have on our team. So we'll make a selection dependent on who we have, okay? Now, I know we don't like to try and let that affect us in terms of who we have this early. We try to go best player available. But I want to ask you about Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, I'm really surprised about this pick. I mean, I know I wouldn't have selected him there. You really think that around 12th overall, you feel comfortable taking Elliott now?
Yeah, I think he's right on the end of the first round, second round cusp. But, you know, I think you look at if you're going to go running back, you got to look at Ezekiel Elliott, David Johnson, purely because of the upside. Lamar Miller to me is still down a notch. Devontae Freeman, with receivers, you know, clearly you have Brandon Marshall, you have Keenan Allen, you have Jordy Nelson that are all still available, who I all like. But I think right here, and this is where I think the human element comes into play, because whether we like to admit it or not, when you're on the clock, you might make a move that, you know, if you had time to think about it, you wouldn't make, or that a week before you wouldn't make. If you're on the clock, you might just say, I want to have Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, part of playing fantasy is having fun. You know, there is something to be said for wanting to have a player like Ezekiel Elliott on your team who's exciting, who plays for the Cowboys, who has the potential to catch a ton of passes, get a lot of touchdowns, run behind that offensive line. So, you know, I could see myself definitely taking him over a David Johnson here.
Right. So David Johnson's still on the board. So you take him over David Johnson because he's still on the board.
Correct. Yep. I mean, I think it's a toss-up. I think you could go either way, but I would probably lean towards maybe going Ezekiel Elliott.
Okay. Now, if it's a PPR league, which this is, I'm going to go ahead and pick up David Johnson. Now, I'm going to pretend that I've already got the 12th pick. I've got Ezekiel. I'm just going to go back-to-back running back at this point. If David Johnson is still available, the 13th overall pick in a PPR league, I feel like he can bring me the value pretty much just by receiving. So if he actually turns into the runner that we all hope he is, then I'm going to hit a home run here. So I'm going to go David Johnson at pick 13.
Okay, and this is where I get into my, you know, the bread and butter part of the draft, I like to call it, because this is where all the receivers that I love are still available. And right here at pick 13.
No, I just took 13. You're on 14.
All right, at pick 14. Good thing we have you counting for me. Jeez. At pick 14, I'm going to go with a player who I'm probably going to overdraft, but I'm fine with it. I'm going Keenan Allen here.
Oh, you son of a gun. That was,
I know.
I almost took him at 13.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, Keenan Allen, you know, you could make a really strong case for taking Brandon Marshall, for taking Jordy, for even taking Devontae Freeman with the year he had last year. But I'm perfectly happy taking Keenan Allen in a PPR league because he's a guy who's held, like, let's face it, if he would have played all 16 games last year, he would have had over 120 catches. This is a guy that's going to catch over 100 balls. You know, touchdowns are kind of bonus with him. He's going to get over 5-6 touchdowns. So love Keenan Allen here. He's like a better version. He's like a Julian Edelman with more upside, with a higher ceiling. So love Keenan Allen. This is a player, too, that you could even argue could be a top 12 pick. It's just in the first round, you generally want to go with a little bit more upside, lean towards running back, especially with so many good receivers. So taking Keenan Allen here at 14, and pretty pumped about it.
Yeah. You gotta be ready and prepared when you're in the draft. I was honestly gonna take him at 15, almost took him at 13, but David Johnson was too much to pass up. But I want to comment. It's funny now that I'm like paying attention to it, kind of, I guess. We had a review that commented on Seth talking about Julian Edelman too much, and now I've already heard you say his name twice. So that was kind of hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is at this point. I can't help it. I can't help it. But you know what? I really wanted, when we were doing prep for this episode, we were thinking about undervalued players, overvalued players, I started to type Julian Edelman underneath undervalued. I'm like, you know what? I'm like, backspace. I'm not gonna go down there that road again, because I'll hear about it from all these comments. But
yeah, we gotta apologize for all the Edelman talk that we're stuffing down everyone's throat. Okay, so pick 15 here, Seth. I got the right numbers in front of me. I got Le'Veon Bell on my team in the first round, and I'm gonna go Jordy Nelson here. He was a person I had right after Keenan Allen. Jordy Nelson, I feel great about, especially in this range. How can you not? I mean, he missed all of last year. He's had more than enough time to rehab. He's got the Green Bay offense. I'm gonna pair him up with the Pittsburgh offense, Le'Veon Bell. Now I even get like the perfect combination of RB1, wide receiver one. I feel great about that, so I'm going to take Jordy here.
Interesting.
So you have pick 16 now, and Jamal Charles was the first pick in the first round with this team.
Okay, interesting. So Jamal Charles in the first round. One comment on Jordy. I love Jordy. I hate to be in this position where I have to say anything negative about him, but I don't know what it is this year. I just don't feel good about taking Jordy Nelson this high. And it, you know, his track record suggests that he should be in this range and he's earned it, but I don't know. I just don't feel comfortable taking Jordy this high. But for where I am right now in the draft with Jamal Charles already on my roster, I am going to go, you know, I can't pass up on him. I'm going to go Brandon Marshall, who should be a sure thing. We have Ryan Fitzpatrick back under center. He had a monster year last year, and I think him and Jamal Charles are a really good combo, really good 1-2 punch. So I'm going Brandon Marshall here.
Okay, perfect. All right, AP was picked for this team in the first round. I got pick 17. Lamar Miller still available. Got Gronkowski. We've got Mike Evans, Devontae Freeman, Amari Cooper, Brandon Cooks, Alshon, LeSean McCoy. I think this is when it starts getting into some potential hairy territory for me, Seth. I think a lot of the people that we like a lot just went in the first half of the second round. There's a couple left, but depending on my situation, I don't want to get myself in a situation where I'm even considering Amari Cooper or Brandon Cooks in the second round. So, and we're getting close to where those are the ADPs. But that being said, I'm going to have to go with my boy Mike Evans. Big believer in the Tampa Bay offense, obviously, this year. Lovie Smith has been kicked to the curb. Jerick Cutter's at the helm and expecting a big bounce back year, especially with touchdowns from Mike Evans. So I'm going to grab him with the 17th overall pick and feel pretty good about it.
Interesting. That was me, my pick at 18. And then one thing that I want to mention, too, about the first two rounds is at least – for me, and it, you know, other people feel differently, of course, but it doesn't really matter. I like my second round pick, most likely, you know, who I took in the first round isn't going to really factor into my decision that much, because I'm just looking for top level talent. I'm looking for the best available players. It doesn't matter if I took a running back or receiver. I'm just getting the best available players. Now, if all things are equal, the tiebreaker would go to, you know, factoring that into my decision. But I'm just going best available. At this pick, it's really between two players. One is Devontae Freeman, one is Rob Gronkowski. Just because this is, it gets to the point right now where, okay, now I feel comfortable maybe taking Gronk and having by far the best tight end on my team. But I'm going to go with Devontae Freeman. He was the number one running back in fantasy last year. A lot of people are picking him to be, you know, not a bust, but somebody that's definitely going to come down to earth. I don't think he repeats the year he had last year, but I think he's good enough to be, at least to have top five running back upside. So I think this is the obvious pick at this point in the draft.
Okay. That's pick 18. You pair him up with Dez. And I totally agree with you about the first round pick. You know, typically when we're responding back to the listener questions, we really try not to pay attention to what's happening in the first round. And for that matter, even really it goes for the third round, really for almost any scenario for the most part. Maybe if I've got really shallow rosters, that might come into play. But especially in the first three rounds, you're just trying to get the best top-end talent that you feel strongly about, as you said earlier. So let's get to my pick. I got pick 19. DeAndre Hopkins did go to this team at 6 overall. And Lamar Miller is still sitting out there, of course. And Rob Gronkowski is still sitting out there. But with this pick, I'm starting to become a little bit more on him. I mean, I had him pretty high, Seth, really all offseason. I had him high on my own personal rankings when we did our top 30 overall rankings. And that's LeSean McCoy. So I'm going to take him at pick 19. I'm going to feel pretty good about it. I feel that he can produce at the hopefully very least back in RB1, and I'm getting at the end of the second round.
Interesting. So this will be probably the first pick that you've taken that I just really disagree with. And it's not too far off. I think LeSean McCoy is going to have I don't want to say a bounce back year because he was solid last year, but I think he's going to have a better year this year, which speaks to, you know, why we like him so much.
Yeah, and let me real quick, too. That is a little bit lower than people might say, well, why don't you take Amari or Brandon Cooks or something like that or an Alshon Jeffrey? And really it just came down to I felt a little bit more safe with McCoy. Jeffrey just gets hurt a bit more than McCoy does. And Amari Cooper and Brandon Cooks hasn't proven it as long as McCoy has. Being the running back, and I like him, and I like him going into the season. And I think if he stays healthy, he's got top five upside for running back. So I went a little bit with more what I felt was a little bit more of a sure thing at the same time, even though some other people might not.
Yeah, and another thing that I was going to bring up after, I'm going to say it for after this, but sometimes when you have the first two rounds, sometimes you can't worry about who you think you're supposed to take, you know, based on rankings. Just take the player that you want to have on your team. Take the player that you're confident can help you week in and week out. And I think Keenan Allen is a great example of that towards the tail end of the first round. I think he's a player that I would love to – you might have to get him in the first round if you want to get him at all, depending on where your pick is. And I think LeSean McCoy is a good example of this in the second round. Right, you got to take him around, around too early before you end up, you know, getting, you know, not being able to get him at all. So, but right here, I mean, this is, and you listed off three players I think are really good examples: Amari Cooper, Brandon Cooks, Alshon Jeffrey. Don't want any of them in this range. Alshon Jeffrey because of the injuries. Brandon Cooks just because I think he's a little bit overrated. Amari Cooper for, you know, same exact reasons as Brandon Cooks. So this is where I'm going to go Rob Gronkowski. You know, I get the best tight end in the NFL on my team, someone who's a lock for 10 touchdowns, in the best offense in the NFL. I just, you know, at this point, this is where I want to take Gronkowski, and I don't have to worry about the tight end position the rest of the draft.
Okay. Now, this is getting tough for us because I know that we're selecting a lot of our own players, too. And typically, when you're playing with other people, you know, a Brandon Cooks will get slid in there. A Lamar Miller, who hasn't even been selected yet, will get slid in there. We'll push some of these players back. So this is getting deep into some of the people where if I had to take one of them in the late second, you know, I'm not going to feel great about it. But as you mentioned, Amari Cooper, Brandon Cooks, Alshon Jeffrey is available. Lamar Miller is available. I think at this point, it'd be dumb for me not to take Lamar Miller. And I know we've kind of talked about where he's going and the 12th-ish overall, just a bit too high. But now at this point, especially in a PPR league, like the other player I mentioned, he's going to bring value just on receiving alone. So, and I made the same comment about David Johnson. So I'm going to go Lamar Miller at 21 overall. And the first pick for overall was Todd Gurley. And again, I don't care. Like, if that gives me two RB1s, then I am set to go all out on wide receivers for the rest of the draft. And I am happy with that. So Lamar Miller at pick 21. Seth, you're up at 22.
Yeah, okay. So this is where I take a closer look at those receivers that I just bashed a second ago. Because it's a necessary evil at this point in the draft where we're at to have to take one of these players. I mean, they're all good. It's just I'm not a big fan of them, and I think they're a little bit overvalued. But I have to go with either Amari Cooper, Brandon Cooks, or Jeffrey because – you know, I'm not going to go Ingram or Lacy here or Hilton or Jarvis Landry. So if it's between Amari Cooper, Brandon Cooks, and Alshon Jeffrey, I think I'm going to have to go Alshon Jeffrey and just roll the dice that he doesn't get injured, which I know is a big roll of the dice, but I like his upside more than the other two. I think Brandon Cooks would probably be my next choice here, but I'm going to go Alshon Jeffrey.
Okay, and that would have definitely been my next pick, so that makes my decision a bit tougher at pick 23. And, of course, we got Amari Cooper, Brandon Cooks, as you mentioned. I'm not even considering Brandon Cooks. Definitely considering Amari Cooper. Definitely considering Eddie Lacy. I don't mind Eddie Lacy. I think he's got to bounce back, and I'm considering T.Y. and Jarvis as well. I just feel like But, you know, I don't think the floor should be too low in Amari. So that being said, I think I got to go Amari Cooper.
Perfect. So this leaves me with Brandon Cooks. But you know what? I'm going to do something crazy here. And, you know, part of this is out of spite. Do you know who I'm going to take here? And I think all our listeners could probably guess based on a player I've been talking about a lot. But to close out the second round, I'm going with my boy Julian Edelman. And I'm taking him over Brandon Cooks, which is the only questionable person, really, in my mind. I like Edelman more than Landry. I like him more than DT. It's a little bit of a reach, but part of it is I want to have Edelman on my team, and I'm willing to overpay for him.
Well, that's definitely sure to get us a couple more reviews. But I definitely
bring it on.
But I definitely hear what you're saying because I was really contemplating, and I could easily in the middle of a draft make this decision and say, you know what, I want Randall Cobb. I mean, I just love Randall Cobb this season. And, you know, tell me what the difference is between Cobb and Cooper. I think the touchdowns would be the main difference, but, you know, I feel really comfortable with Cobb. But in this instance, I took Cooper. I thought about it, so I know where you're coming from. Overall, Seth, what were your thoughts on this quick 24-pick exercise?
I think, and this is just—it's just funny. Like we were talking about the human element of the draft and how, in the heat of the moment, you make different decisions than you otherwise might make. I think with me, I'm already kind of regretting taking Ezekiel Elliott at 12. Not because I think it's necessarily too big of a reach. I think he's got the upside. I can see why a lot of people would and would get excited about him at pick number 12. But I also think that it would be really, really hard for me to pass up on someone who's a little more proven, like David Johnson, or somebody like Keenan Allen, who I just like those type of players in PPR leagues. I like the players that can go out and get 100-plus catches, like the Edelmans, you know, like Jarvis Landry, those types of players. So I'm kind of partial to the Keenan Allens of the world, so it's tough though because Ezekiel has got a ton of upside, but that'd be the one player I'd look at and say, hey, you know, maybe I would do it a little bit differently.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I have any player that I necessarily would take back, but I think in the quick time it took us to do that, it really does put you in a position of, man, pick 15. Do I really want to take this person here? And then you all of a sudden start getting into the situation that you might find yourself in a draft.
Yep. So I think that was definitely interesting. I think that's pretty straightforward with, you know, some of the players we've been talking about. It's a little bit different, like you said, because when you're in drafts with a bunch of different people, you're going to see like Lamar Miller go a lot higher. You're going to see other players. You might see a Sammy Watkins in the second round. Who knows? So it's different. But with me and you, we're generally on the same page with a lot of these players. So it's going to be pretty much by the book, you know, for these first two rounds.
Yeah, and I think another thing, as we're staying on this theme here, Seth, of drafts, preparing for drafts, we're trying to get everyone ready for drafts. I don't think there was anything more evident this weekend as well than knowing your league, right? And we get a couple questions that will, like, preface their question with quarterbacks go super early or something along those lines. It's really important to know your league. I mean, just in terms of not only the scoring and the settings, but how do people react to, you know, drafting quarterbacks and this or that. And so it's really tough for us to maybe like start giving strategy on your league because we don't know it, obviously. But knowing your league has invaluable, you know, information on how you should be reacting to how everyone else is drafting quarterbacks or overdrafting running backs or whatever the case might be.
Yep, knowing other players in your league's tendencies is really important, and you know, scoring and roster size, all that comes into play. It's really hard for us to answer questions, or not say it's hard, but it's much easier for us to answer questions if we have more information to work with. You know, like what type of league is it? What are the you know, what's the point system? You know, what is the roster construction? All that good stuff.
Yeah, and I think one of the questions, just, you know, we get so many questions, so we're referring back to a lot of these because if one person's asking them, then, you know, we feel like other of you are having the same questions, you know, that some of our listeners are sending in. And a lot of those are, well, hey, we got crazy bonus points for QBs and just, like, bonus points all over the place. And so that results in a lot of scoring for QBs, and that results in a lot of QBs being drafted really early. And I think we kind of mentioned this on the episode past or semi-recently, but if you have a lot of scoring for your QBs, all that does is affect all your QBs. I mean, it's relative to the entire position. So don't overreact sometimes. I think that might be one great example of saying, well, wait a second, just because everyone else is drafting QBs, I might be able to take advantage of this trend, this tendency, and go against the grain because it makes no sense. You know, go back to our philosophy of waiting for a QB if you have only one QB start in a 12-person league, because even though everyone's getting bonus points, that is affecting every quarterback.
Yep, couldn't agree more. And that's why in our league over the weekend, two quarterback leagues, I ended up with Big Ben and Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know, I was able to get Fitzpatrick at a decent price. You had Tannehill, your second run quarterback. So, you know, you and I are both perfectly fine with that, right? As your second quarterback in a two quarterback league, Tannehill Fitzpatrick is really solid. And even in a one quarterback league, if you have Fitzpatrick or Tannehill, you know, that's not terrible either.
No, and again, like in our league, Derek Carr went for $20, and we're just going to kind of give out some of these prices to help give people a perspective of maybe how much more people are valuing one player over another. And so Derek Carr went for $20, and my third, as just like a backup QB, I got Alex Smith for $1. And I went ahead and looked up his points from last season, and at least in our league, he only had 50 less points than Derek Carr. So, you know, just a couple more points per game, a couple less points per game than Derek Carr, but of course went for 1/120th the price. So knowing the tendencies like that and knowing the league scoring, just because everyone else is going after quarterbacks, and especially when you're playing a two-quarterback league, doesn't mean you have to follow the trend. If you can identify a situation where you can buck it and get ahead of everyone else, it's definitely going to pay dividends.
Yep, and another quarterback like that, I know this is a player that went undrafted, actually, and was on free agents. I thought about putting a claim for him, but I just had no room on my bench. Joe Flacco. And I know you hate Joe Flacco, and I know you kind of laugh every time I bring him up, but in a two-quarterback league, if you have a spot on your bench and you can stash Joe Flacco, I think you could be in a worse position than that. I mean, his offense, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but Breshad Perriman, who's going to play this year, Steve Smith, Kamar Aiken, Justin Forsett, Kenneth Dixon, they got Benjamin Watson over from New Orleans, should bring a little bit of stability. And then Mike Wallace, who, if nothing else, is going to play that Torrey Smith role, who can get down the field. I kind of like that for somebody like a gunslinger like Joe Flacco in a two-quarterback league. Those players are going to be available. So there's so much value. Like this, the quarterback position is so deep this year. Everyone should just keep that in mind as they're drafting.
Yeah, even in a two-quarterback league. And I don't like Joe Flacco. I mean, I don't like to really love the offense. I always love that they always think they try and stay more committed to the run than they should, and never really love their weapons. But I mean, if you're gonna tell me in a two quarterback league, what's the difference between him and Alex Smith? I mean, I'm not gonna be able to really fight you on that. I mean, maybe I like Alex Smith a little bit more. Maybe I like the Kansas City Chiefs offense a little bit more. But in reality, what is the difference? Not a whole lot, probably. So
yeah, and I think the only real difference is Alex Smith's never gonna have a bad week. But he's never going to have a great week for you. Joe Flacco is never going to is going to have those weeks where he throws three or four touchdowns. I mean interceptions. But he's also going to have those weeks where he gets you 30 fantasy points and he has those really big, you know, big weeks where, you know, four or five touchdowns. So he's a little less inconsistent, but he has more upside.
Yep. Okay. So let's keep moving along here in terms of preparing for this draft. Let's talk about overvalued, undervalued players, Seth. That we're seeing, you know, just that we're coming away from the draft and saying, wow, that person went for a good price. This person went a little bit higher than I thought. So what are some of the overvalued, undervalued players? And let's roll into this. What are the trending players? So kick us off.
Yep. So, you know, I think a lot of this too, even before the draft that we were in, we based part of this on the drafts that we did this last weekend. But also just some of the ADPs prior to the draft, getting a feel for, you know, which players had some momentum in either direction. But I think let's look at a couple running backs. We'll do running backs first. A couple running backs, I'm going to list off, you know, two or three names to you. These are some running backs I think are being undervalued. Danny Woodhead, James White, who, you know, is going to be the pass-catching back for the Patriots with Deion Lewis out at least the first 6 weeks. James White caught 40 passes last year in basically six games that he played in. So he would have played all 16 games, he would have caught 80 to 100 balls. He had six total touchdowns last year, which I know surprised you when I listed off that earlier in our conversation.
Yep.
So James White's got a ton of upside playing for New England. I think he's, you know, I know it's a fluid situation because Deion Lewis, the news just broke actually after our draft, right, that Deion Lewis was going to be out. But I think James White is going to be undervalued, because I think a lot of the attention is going to go to LeGarrette Blount, enough attention to take away from James White to, you know, put him in a really good position in terms of good value. And then two more, Jeremy Hill, 11 touchdowns last year. I think he has a bounce back year and has a year closer to his rookie season than the season he had last year. And then the other player is DeMarco Murray, who I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, I think Tennessee's offense is going to surprise people. I think DeMarco Murray is going to have 7 to 10 touchdowns. And if he's going in the fourth round or later, I think you're getting a steal.
Yeah, I think – okay, so you read me off all those names, and I was just trying to go back in terms of the memory bank here and recall when they went, what I thought about them, what we talked about them prior to the drafts. And I would agree with you in the sense that all of them are not really getting valued in drafts. I mean, they're all kind of getting overlooked. I don't believe in all of them. Like, I don't really believe in Tennessee's offense. You know how I feel about Mike Mularkey. I think he's a bum. But, you know, again, though, if you're in a standard league, I think that helps out DeMarco Murray a lot more. I don't know. I just do. I just feel like he doesn't have to compete with the people like Danny Woodheads of the world, who's going to get like 80 catches. So I feel like that bumps up his value, but he's not really getting a bump in standard leagues. Jeremy Hill is just a complete afterthought right now for most people. And so he's sliding at a pretty decent rate. I don't think he's going to come out and do anything spectacular, but he's going to get most of the rushing touchdowns. So I agree with you there. Again, in a standard league, I don't think he's being overdrafted because, oh, in a standard league, he gets touchdown. I don't think he's been getting valued that way either. So I think a couple of these players you mentioned, I don't necessarily love, but they're not getting any loves in any love in the draft. And if people can take someone else over them, they are.
Yeah, and a player like Danny Wood, I think, you know, even in PPR leagues, I think because so many people are used to standard leagues that these great PPR running backs still get treated as if it's a standard league, if that makes any sense. So, like, Danny Woodhead, people have this, you know, this mindset where they look at Danny Woodhead as not really being a real running back, or, you know, he's really boring, and all he does is catch passes. And he just gets overlooked because of it. I mean, he was a top three running back in our PPR leagues last year at the running back position. So Danny Woodhead's getting overlooked. So those are some of the ones that I came up with that I think are just being undervalued. Those are players that people should keep an eye on. You know, just be cognizant of the fact that those players I think are going to be getting overlooked, and they're great value plays. At the receiver position, I just want to read off a couple names to you as well. I mean, one player that, you know, his ADP is around.
I have one running back before we go to wide receivers. Is Christine Michael. He's on the other side. He's kind of going up for some reason. And I'm not saying he's going, like, high, you know, in the top 10 rounds. I don't know where his ADP is. But people are talking about him. He's done a couple of things in the preseason. I mean, this is the guy that has completely failed us year in and year out for I don't know how many years now. People need to make sure that they're staying away. He's not even worth a back-end roster spot. He's not worth any roster spot on any team, on any league settings, on any roster settings that I am aware of.
Yeah, I mean, he's had so many chances to produce, and he just hasn't. Whether it's Seattle, whether it's Dallas, I mean, he just hasn't done anything with the opportunities he's been given. So that's a good one. I mean, while we're on that, before we get in receivers, we'll just kind of round out the running back position. Keeping in line with that, other running backs I think are getting overvalued. Latavius Murray, I'll put this in the category of I just don't get it. I just don't get it with Latavius Murray. I don't think Oakland loves Latavius Murray, which is why they drafted a running back. And he didn't have a good season last year. I was looking at his game logs and like what he did week in and week out, and there's just really nothing there to get excited about. I mean, I don't know. What are your thoughts on Latavius Murray?
No, I don't really like him. I mean, I like him in the sense that Jack Del Rio would love to run the ball 99 times out of 99 times. And that's really the only real reason, and it's not a very good one. So they improved their offensive line, so everyone's excited about that. But I'll tell you what about Oakland. Oakland is the new Minnesota Vikings of last year. Everyone's so jazzed up about their offense. They're so jazzed up about them winning the division. They're all having just complete mental brain farts to the fact that you still have Jack Del Rio as your head coach. And sometimes you just have to look beyond, like, the sheet of paper, you know, oh, this looks good on paper. They just increased they helped out their offensive line. They brought in these free agent players, and they should take another step forward. Derek Carr should take another step forward. All these people should take a step forward. And sometimes when it gets down to it on the field, they can't execute. And that's kind of the side that I'm leaning towards with Oakland, just because it's something that I've seen year in and year out, just like Cleveland. And this is why I love to buy into offenses as much as I can in fantasy. And Oakland does not really fall in the category of offenses I'm really interested in.
Yeah, I mean, Latavius Murray, number one, in PPR leagues, he doesn't catch the ball. He had 41 catches last year. So he's not someone that's going to catch a lot of passes. He only had 5 touchdowns. So it's not someone you can really depend on to get in the end zone very often. He only had 2 games with over 100 yards running. So he's not somebody that has any upside, I don't think. Which is why I have him in my, you know, I call it my I don't get it category. But definitely a player that I think is being overvalued. And the other player, Giovanni Bernard, kind of the flip side of the Jeremy Hill, Giovanni Bernard coin. He only had 49 catches last year, and that's his only role, catching passes. So only 49 catches, 2 touchdowns. You know, he's not getting in the end zone at all. And if anything, I think this year, I think you're going to see it trend more in Jeremy Hill's direction, where he's going to have a better year. And I think Giovanni Bernard is going to still have that niche in the offense as the the pass catching back, but I don't think he's going to overtake Jeremy Hill. Certainly not getting the red zone carries, and I don't think he's somebody that has the potential to get 70 to 80 catches like a Danny Woodhead, like even a James White. So I just think Giovanni Bernard is overvalued, especially if he's getting drafted ahead of Jeremy Hill, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah, actually, I kind of disagree with you on this one, and I don't think anyone's really putting a whole lot of stock into Gio Bernard. So I kind of see your point because he hasn't done anything, but he's not really going for a lot either. I mean, he's not going that high in drafts. He didn't go for a lot of money in our auction draft this weekend. He is someone that had 66 targets and had 150 carries. So you're talking about a player who's on a fairly good offense and had zero receiving touchdowns last year. So you would think that we always talk about Mike Evans, regression to the mean receiving touchdowns. Gio Bernard should have a couple of those. And again, he's going pretty cheap. I think he went for like $10 or less than that in our draft this weekend. And I just think for someone that's in a pretty decent offense, 150 carries, he had 50 catches last year. I kind of disagree with you in terms of overvalued. I think that he's getting a little overlooked, and I think he presents a little bit of upside if there's any type of additional shares per se to go around with the loss of Sanu and Marvin Jones or potential injury in Jeremy Hill. Let's not also forget that Tyler Eifert's probably not starting the year too.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way I look at it is, in number one, like, his ADP is end of the fifth round. So he's going ahead of Jeremy Hill in most drafts. He's going three rounds ahead of Charles Sims, who, it's your boy, right? You love Charles Sims. What's the difference between Giovanni Bernard and Charles Sims? I mean, wouldn't you rather have Charles Sims three rounds later than Bernard?
I absolutely would, which is why I like Jamal Charles Sims, but What I'm trying to say is I don't think he's going exactly where his ADP is. I think he's dropping.
Yeah, well, within reason though. So I don't think he's always going to go in the fifth round. I think that it's generally speaking going to be outside the fifth round. But I'm not taking him in the top 7-8 rounds. I mean, I just don't see him having any upside. Like you have Yeldon's ADP is the 9th round. Definitely taking more Tevin Coleman. Forsett going in the 8th round. I mean, I'd almost rather have Forsett. I mean, call me crazy, but
That's a little crazy. All right, let's get to wide receivers.
All right, let's get to wide receivers here. So real quick, undervalued Arizona wide receivers. So I kind of put them in one category: Michael Floyd, John Brown, Larry Fitzgerald. Because in every draft, this is my prediction, and people can tell me if I'm wrong. Just keep an eye on this when you're doing a draft. One of those three receivers is going to be had at a really, really good value, is going to drop. I think the fact that there's three receivers that are really good in Arizona diminishes each of their value to a certain extent. So in our auction over the weekend, Michael Floyd was the one that was had at a really good price. I think they're all very, very solid. So I think Arizona wide receivers are being undervalued, considering the offense, the quarterback, and how, John Brown had 9 touchdowns last year, or 7 touchdowns, sorry, last year. So they're all really good. They're all being undervalued, I believe. Another player is Allen Hurns, 10 touchdowns last year. He's 23 years old, plays every down for a team that's always behind, an offense that's on the upswing. So, and I asked this question to you the other day, and I'll ask it to you again. What's the difference between Allen Hurns in the 6th round and Brandon Cooks in the 3rd round?
I know it sounds crazy for us to say that, but I think you're right on Allen Hurns. And I think, again, these are some people that we're seeing fall even lower than some of their ADPs or higher than their ADPs. And people are just don't want to draft Allen Hurns, right? Like, there's the regression on Jacksonville's offense. He's not Allen Robinson. There's no way Blake Bortles scored that many touchdowns. And so he's just one of those players that you draft in the 5th or the 6th round, and then maybe you come all the way back and he's still there in the 7th. He's one of those players that just kind of hangs around for an extra round or two. that seems to be. Now, not every draft is the same, of course, but I agree with you. I mean, he's still the number two, unless Marquise Lee can get really healthy, or Julius Thomas can miraculously get really healthy, or TJ Yeldon can miraculously catch a lot of passes, or Jacksonville can miraculously play from ahead. So there's a lot of miracles apparently going to have to happen in Jacksonville, but... I think he's got a shot at having decent value and decent return, especially if he's getting overlooked in your draft like we've been seeing.
Yeah, and it seemed like he had a touchdown every single game last year. And so on one hand, you think, okay, well, you know, that's going to regress a little bit. That's going to return back to the mean. He's not going to just catch all those touchdowns. But on the other hand, you look at it and say, oh, well, this team's always down. He's 6'3". He's a good red zone target. They throw a lot. He's the number two receiver. Like, so I don't think he gets 10 touchdowns. I mean, I think he's going to be right in that range, I think, give or take. But I think for where he's going, I think he's a steal. A couple wide receivers I think are being overvalued. And I really want to pick on two players right here. Number one, Stephon Diggs. Now, yeah. His ADP has him going in the 9th round. That's not early by any means. I just don't care. I don't want Stephon Diggs on my team at all. And I'll tell you why. If you're going to take a Minnesota receiver, which just in the interest of full disclosure, I don't want any Minnesota receiver on my roster at all. I hate the Minnesota Vikings offense this year. But if I am going to have a Minnesota receiver, give me Laquon Treadwell in the 12th or 13th round rather than Stephon Diggs. That's just the way that I would approach it. So I hate Stephon Diggs. I'm guessing we're on the same page with this one, right?
Yeah, I'm just not interested in trying to figure out when Stephon Diggs is going to do good and when he's not, or when he's going to potentially lose his target share to Laquon Treadwell because he, you know, starts picking up the offense in the middle of the season, or I don't know, or the 50-yard touchdown goes to Charles Johnson or Adrian Peterson end up running for 80 yards because Teddy Bridgewater threw for 447 yards. And again, here's another – this is why I love to pay attention to coaches and game planning and offenses. Minnesota's Mike Zimmer, if he could run it zero times in the game and win, he'll do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm so done with Minnesota Vikings. Unless, obviously, besides Adrian Peterson, I'd love to have Peterson on my team.
Yeah. Now, as a football team, Seth, you know I love Minnesota as a football team. They play great defense. They run. They play.
They're boring.
They're boring. This is the first rule of me liking you as a team. You have to be boring, and good, and usually winning. And Minnesota fits all those categories, but fantasy wise. Even if you are the number one target on an offense, in this case, it's not helpful.
And the other player that I have under, you know, being overvalued, and I know this is a player you've been harping on for a while, so I'm just going to pass the mic over to you and let you just vent for a little bit. Josh Gordon.
I can't understand. You put Latavius Murray in your "you don't get it" category. I simply don't get this. First of all, I thought when they announced his reinstatement with the four game, I thought without the four game, I was like, man, I wonder if people are going to start taking him in the 10th round. Well, guess what? He's got a four game suspension. He's going in the 6th round with Allen Hurns, a guy who caught 10 touchdown passes, just got paid by the Jacksonville Jaguars, younger, and you have Josh Gordon, who's one drug test away from getting like kicked out of the league. You have to roster him for 4 weeks. You know how much I love rostering people. Let me see. What else?
It's a deal breaker right there.
Oh, let me see. What else? Let's see. They have the Cleveland offense. I don't care if they got new coaches, new offensive coordinators, new quarterbacks, which they do because they do every year. They still have the Cleveland offense. The Cleveland offense is the Cleveland offense for as long as I've known them, and it's not good. They also happen to have RG3, another guy who hasn't played in over a year. This sounds like the perfect recipe for success.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to hear the other side of this argument. You're going to hear people say, well, he played with RG3 at Baylor. They have that connection. You're going to hear people mentioning, you know, Hugh Jackson being the coach now, and their offense is going to be much improved. You're going to hear people talk about the upside. But I think it goes down to a couple main things that you touched on. Number one is you can't trust the guy. He's out for four games, so you're not going to have him for the first four games. And even beyond that, you really can't trust him. He could make a dumb decision and be, you know, suspended again. The other thing is he's missed so much time. There's just so much unpredictability here. And considering the offense and the organization, what makes you think that he's going to be able to step in with all these question marks and just perform as if he never left? And for somebody, you know, if he's going in the 10th, 11th, 12th round, that's fine. If he's going in the 6th round with all these players like John Brown, like Allen Hearns, Golden Tate.
It's literally crazy, yeah, that someone's taking John Brown or taking Josh Gordon over John Brown or Allen, yep, Hearns, or Golden Tate for that matter. You know, none of these players that we really love, but I mean, for crying out loud, I mean, Matt Stafford's going to throw for 650 times. He's going to throw for over 4,000 yards, close to 30 touchdowns. I think I want to be his number one receiver. I think I want to grab his number one receiver over RG3.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think I couldn't agree more. So, I mean, we could spend probably, you know, a whole hour-long podcast just talking about the reasons why we don't like Josh Gordon. And maybe we should. You know, we still got a couple weeks until the season starts, so I think that might have to be the agenda.
Yeah, one sunny afternoon we'll squeeze that in. Okay.
And can I get an episode talking about Edelman too? Can I just squeeze that in?
You've already done that. You've done that every single episode. I think everyone's getting completely annoyed by that by now.
Okay.
All right, so let's wrap up with a couple bench people. We did the first two rounds for everyone, right? We talked about knowing your league. We talked about the human element. We've talked about some trending players, some overrated, underrated. Let's finish up with just a couple bench people. If I'm in a PPR league, then one of the people I'm going to be looking at is Darren Sproles. I mean, I would love to stash him on all the benches just to see if anything happens. And I'm going to go back to this whole head coaching thing, but Doug Peterson underneath Andy Reid, he knows how to use a running back. I feel like someone somewhere and something in Philadelphia is going to happen at the running back position. And in a PPR league, I'm interested in having Darren Sproles on my team.
Yep. In general, for my bench, I like to have at least one or two running backs that I know they're kind of safe, you know, low ceiling but relatively high floor running backs that are starters. So on my bench in our league this last weekend, I have Frank Gore, T.J. Yeldon, and Aaron Foster, three running backs who are going to be the starter. Especially like Frank Gore is a really good example of a player that I'd love to have on my bench. Don't feel, you know, I wouldn't be ecstatic about having him as one of my starting two running backs. But if he's on my bench, I'm feeling pretty good about it, because if anything happens with one of my first two running backs that I have starting, I can just plug Gore in. I know he's getting 15 carries. I know he's getting the goal line carries. He's in a really good offense. So if that's the worst case scenario, I can live with that.
Now, let's also remember the bench has to be a makeup of what the rest of your team looks like. So at this point is when I start really looking at my roster construction. So for your team, Seth, when we did our draft this weekend, I was a little surprised you didn't go a little more upside. You know, you named a lot of players that you could expect to kind of fill in pretty quickly. But your league, your team is also pretty steady all the way through. So I was expecting maybe a little bit more of, if I had a team like that, maybe I'm throwing in more of the Devontae Bookers of the world. I'll give you one that I have on my team, Justin Hardy. I'd like to have at least one of these types of players on my bench. The I don't knows of the world, I guess. You know, they got upside. Atlanta's number three wide receivers are always proven to be semi-productive. Just one of these free players, whoever it is. It could be Devontae Booker. It could be Justin Hardy. It could be someone else that you just think has a lot of upside, and there's just no way of knowing right now. There's just not enough information.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree that it's good to, I always like to have at least one or two bench spots taken by players with just upside. But with Justin Hardy, I mean, how deep is your bench to have Justin Hardy? I mean, if I had like 15 roster, you know, bench spots, I'd waste the 15th on Justin Hardy. But I mean, I guess I have to know how deep this bench is.
Well, I mean, I took a risk there, obviously, but again, it's who you like, and in Atlanta, I just like the third wide receiver. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Sanu. I just felt like there's maybe an opportunity there. And again, I was just going for complete upside. But here's a person that would be probably one of your first off your bench, one of your bench starters. I like to call them bench starters. I know these people are going to be one of my flex starters as soon as my bye weeks start happening. And that's Sterling Shepard. I cannot get enough of this guy. I want to own him as much as I can. I did not get to purchase him in our auction draft this weekend. But Sterling Shepard, I feel like not only does he have a decent floor because of the offense, which, you know, I'm extremely attracted to as well in terms of our 2016 offenses, but I think he's got some pretty decent upside. Not too sure about the touchdown scenario, but especially in a PPR, Sterling Shepard is a guy I'm going to try and own as often as I can.
Yeah, I think that's a good one too. I think he's a solid bench star as well. So agree with you there. And you know what? I hope our listeners start giving you more flack, or you start catching more flack from our listeners about the Sterling Shepard obsession, because it's rising to levels that are almost equaling my Julian Edelman obsession. And I don't think you're getting called out enough for it.
No, because no one knows who he is, and it's kind of still like a little bit underneath the radar, because you're selecting Julian Edelman in front of like big known players. I'm just talking about Sterling Shepard as a bench starter. So while I'm completely fascinated about him, I'm still you know, relatively less concerning to other people, because he's just a bench guy. It doesn't matter who you like. He's just a bench guy. You put him on the bench and he'll hope for the best. You, on the other hand, you're talking about taking Julian Edelman at the end of the second. That could rub people the wrong way.
Yeah, and oh, it definitely has. It's evident by some of the emails we've been getting.
Stop talking about Julian Edelman. Okay. Anyone else that you want to wrap up with, Seth?
No, that's good for now. There's a ton. You know, we got to pace ourselves here. We still got another few weeks to go. So, but I think we covered the main ones that stuck out to me as far as undervalued, overvalued.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, well, if anyone has a question they would like answered, we do our best to answer them all. Not traveling anymore, so we should be able to be on that on a fairly timely response. Go to NFLTalkingHeads.com, submit your question. We've also got our fantasy draft roadmap up there. That's about to close out pretty soon. And thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter. And follow us on Instagram.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Try saying that three times fast. With your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lull. We'll catch you next time.